Hi everyone, this is Steve Perriman again with the Steve Perriman podcast. I've got Tom with me today, and we are going to the second stage of the questions that have been asked by me to me by guests that I've had previously on the show. So how are you, Tom?
Very well, thank you. Day three of the long weekend, just about hanging in there.
Yeah. And have we mentioned about the qualifying for the Champions League?
I don't think we have. I think the last podcast was the day before, wasn't it? We recorded it.
Yeah.
So the day before Norwich.
Because I think I headed it that we were doing this to save our nerves. Anyway, well deserved.
Never in doubt.
What a great job the chap did, Mr. Conte. I think Arsenal need to remember, and I'm obviously talking from experience now, that whenever you try to get a game off in dubious circumstances, it never works. It really never works. So the game that they got called off, be it COVID or lack of numbers or whatever reason you want to give, part of my thinking when the game was rearranged was that, that situation doesn't work out for you in a positive way. And I've had chairman call games off for weather reasons because they think we're weak. But whenever I've played games with a so-called weakened team and therefore played youngsters, it always turns out much better than what you think. So I think that's something for them to think about. But well done, Conte. Well done, the team. Well done, the crowd, by the way. You drove them on. You drove them over the line, which is fantastic. Well done, you. So, I've been to Portugal and back, which is great. The problem being that because of a promise I made 3 or 4 months ago, I then had to go and talk to the Spurs Trust. What's the pub called, Tom?
The Antwerp.
Antwerp Arms. Nice place, nice people, very committed Spurs people. The fact that I only had about 4 or 5 hours sleep having got home 2:30 in the morning from Portugal to be up and then go by train, where I stood all the way on the train from Chippenham to Paddington. Didn't help, but anyway, nice afternoon. I hated the journey going there, hated the journey coming back, but actually the time spent with those committed Spurs people, their group, was amazing, and I felt very well respected and even loved. So that was great. So back on to the questions. I think you've got a question for me, Tom, to start us off.
Sure. So I've always had a issue with the way certain reporters talk about Spurs, talk about with a lack of kind of respect to us as a team, to whether we're perceived as a big enough club for certain players of ours, all that kind of thing. But I was wondering if anyone in the press has ever written something about you that has had an effect that's really got to you, got under your skin, and how you may have reacted to it.
Yeah. So back in the day, we played Real Madrid in a very important European tie. First game at home, and would have been 0-0 bar the fact that I scored an own goal. Did I mean to score the own goal? No. Was it a typical own goal? No. The chap, Real Madrid player, got into the byline, crossed it. Ray Clements is waiting by his near post, dives out and just touches it. And I was recovering to goal, which is my job as a defender. I was recovering to goal. And his touch put it onto my chest, and the momentum put it in the goal. So it decided not only that game, it decided the tie. So you're not proud of that fact. The next day, one of the newspapers, and I think I've put it in my book, so it's not like I'm so embarrassed about it. And the headline was Stevie Blunder. Okay, so I'm actually not, as per your question, it's not really counted in terms of hurting me. But I look at it and think, well, that was written by a sub-editor that's read the facts of the game. It did hit me and go in. And therefore, wouldn't it be a nice headline, Stevie Blunder instead of Stevie Wonder? And so probably didn't even see the game, didn't see the highlights, and just wrote it within his job. And so that was one which was a bit harsh, but that's life. If you're playing at the top level and you're playing against very good players. And the problem with the goal was that was the first Spurs home defeat in Europe for about 20 odd years. And then every time Spurs played at home in the future after that, in the Harry Redknapp years, etc., they'd be now showing the highlights of Spurs home fixture, first leg, second leg, whatever, and it always got mentioned. Spurs have not lost since the Real Madrid game where Steve Perriman scored an own goal. And I'm thinking, I don't really want Tottenham to lose this game, but if they did, they would surely have to stop saying that line, which hurts. The one that really hurt me was, again, coming, I suppose, towards the end of my career. We played an away game at Wolves. I'm not going to pay respect to either the very posh newspaper or probably the posh journalist. But he wrote this match report, almost not mentioning what happened in the game. But the whole report was based around calling me Death Mask. So what that meant was that I didn't smile. I didn't show any emotion during this game. I was going through the motions as such, because I'd done it so many times before, probably 800 odd. And I think actually that chap must have written that article, that match report, before he got to the game. He decided his flow was going to be about me, about being an old pro, and the worst thing I can say about me, I would have been focused, I would have been my mind right, I would have had my game face on. This is serious business. This is where you earn your corn. This is why supporters travel all the way to Wolves to support you. And it's not a light-hearted matter. So if I think the other word he could have used was ultra professional, but he chose to use the term death mask. And that still hurts today, actually. It really does. So again, I'm not going to pay respect to either the paper or the journalist, but it was as if I'd become a cynical old pro and I'd seen it all before. And it was like any other game on a Saturday afternoon, as it would have been in those days. And I went through the motions, not a chance. Every game is different. Every game, something new happens. Okay, a lot of things continue to happen over the course of your career. But you could never actually say, I'm playing this game by memory. And I think that's what he was suggesting I did in a sort of a cynical way. Anyway, so that's my answer, Tom. Good question. You sure you're not a journalist?
Oh, God, heaven help me.
From a posh newspaper?
Definitely not. You've got to think sometimes these journalists must have created these headlines and they're dying to use them. They're dying for like Stevie Blunder, for example. He's probably thought, he's made out that pun, very proud of himself. And then he's thinking, come on, make a mistake so I can use it. And then it comes straight out. Do you remember the greatest football headline of all time? Might just drop in. Was do you remember? It's about 22 years ago when Inverness Caledonian Thistle beat Celtic. And do you remember what the headline was?
Yes.
Super Cali go ballistic. Celtic are atrocious.
Great. Well done.
That's a sub editor earning his money right there.
Yeah, well done, Tom. I like the Tottenham shirt, by the way.
This old thing. Yep. It's my favourite.
Back to the good old Hummel days.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not the worst shirt by any means, was it?
Love it. This in the first Holston one, the first Umbro one as well. 91-92, yeah. I think, was one of my favourite kits as well.
Yeah, and I think the Lecoq shirt, we had a bit of a feeling for that one that got us to cup finals, didn't it?
Definitely.
The Coq Sportif. Yeah. So the next question is coming from Mickey Hazard. So fire away, Mick, please.
Hi, Stevie. Mickey Hazard here. Just a quick question. Stevie, as a great captain, what do you think makes a great captain? What ingredients? Cheers, Stevie. See you soon.
Well, Mickey, thank you very much for that compliment. I very rarely blow my own trumpet, but I think I was a good captain. And, you know, when you play with Jimmy Greaves and Pat Jennings and Ozzie Ardiles and Glenn Hoddle and Mike England and all these wonderful players, you'd be stupid not to know or to think, you know, I can't pass the ball as good as Glenn. I obviously can't catch it one-handed like Pat. I can't be all urgent running with the ball like Ozzie. I can't win the ball in the air like Gilly or Mike England. But eventually you think, well, do you know what? I do fit into this team because I maybe do certain things better than those people. And one of them is my communication and my leadership. And it takes all sorts to make a team. And you put them all together. And hopefully, if you've got most of the ingredients right, that is a successful team. So I suppose it comes down to if you're a manager, what are you looking for in a captain? And I have checked myself this morning, and I phoned Keith Birkinshaw, and he's always good to listen to. You need to select a captain that you have a good relationship with, but not just a good, you get on well, an honest relationship that you can actually criticize each other without actually losing any respect or any credibility by doing so. And it's you're having lots of conversations with regard to your team improving. And I think as captain, you've got to have the ability to see and hopefully recognize what our weaknesses are on a particular day or a trend of weaknesses that's beginning to happen. And therefore, you know, discuss it with the manager and try and think of ways to right those wrongs. So also if you're picking a captain, I think despite Tottenham of these days, and by the way, they've just been successful up to a point, I personally wouldn't want to choose a captain at either end of the field, be it the goalkeeper or the centre forward. I think you need someone in the heat of the battle. And but of course, it's degrees of who else you've got in the team to be able to pick. Also, you've got to pick someone who's selectable, that's not going to be in and out of the team because of his form. So there's got to be a consistency from the captain in terms of his play. There's got to be a consistency of being able to be selected, be it good injury record, be it not getting suspended four times a season as happens with some captains that I'm noticing these days. So I think over the course of time, my so many games, 800-ish games, I got sent off once, therefore I'd have been suspended. I think I got suspended through tally of points, be it red, yellow cards. I think that was twice. So I would have missed games on three occasions in over those 800 games. So I think that's a consistency of discipline. Certainly a consistency of being able to cope with injuries, be it during the game or ready to get fit for the next game, because of course we all get injured. It's a game played by men, particularly in my era. So your body had to be able to take a hit and recover from it. So I think I've told the story in these last questions about Keith asking me about would I play Ricky in the replay against Man City. My answer was no. He then said, well, he's playing. And therefore, you can't get upset. You have to realize you have to know your place. You have to realize where you sit in this team. And you are not the manager. The manager has to make the big calls, as Keith Birkinshaw did on that day. And therefore, it's no good you getting upset when the manager goes against your way. So, that's for sure. That's part of being a good captain. You have to have a knowledge of the game, which is built up through experience of games. So by the time I was a better captain, having played 850 games, as when I played 50, because of the experience of it. But it's also an experience of playing. And for those regular listeners to this podcast, my brother Ted helped me gain an opinion on football. And I gained that opinion much earlier than most players of my same age. And it's that opinion that gets called up in team meetings at halftime. And I think the best thing of all about being a captain, not the best thing, but the most obvious thing you need, is you need to be respected by the people that you're leading. And hopefully I had that respect. Again, I would have had more respect towards the end of my career than the start of my captaincy career, because I'd have had background of hopefully making right decisions or right calls, be it on the pitch or leading to a right call at halftime. But again, at halftime, you have to know your position. You've got a manager, you've got an assistant manager. And of course, you've got other brains in the team who have got their opinions as well. So you've got to be prepared to voice your opinion for the good of the team. So it helps if you are a team orientated player, which I think I was. I've said this before, it's not a popularity contest being captain. And if you think it is and you want to be liked by everyone, don't do it. Just don't do it. Be one of the people that are being led, because if you lead anything, you have to make, manager has to make the toughest calls, the big, big calls. A captain has to make some difficult calls along the way. And therefore, you have to be prepared to fall out with players who suffer from that opinion, that decision, but can also back it up when you are asked about it in later moments, be it on the bus home or the next day or the next team meeting. So you have to have an inner confidence that you can handle this situation. So, yeah, it's a very satisfying position, but not an easy one. And therefore, it's a big call when the manager gives the responsibility, and it is a responsibility, to the particular player. He's your captain, and then you stand together. And of course, when it goes wrong, you have to stand the knocks. And when it goes right, guess what? You go up those stairs at Wembley and pick the cup up. So there's a lot to be said for it. And I'm absolutely delighted and proud and honoured that I was thought of to be a decent captain of the mighty Tottenham Hotspur. So short show today. Thank you for listening. We've got a lot more of these questions to come. A couple from Graham Souness, from Steve Borthwick, Peter Taylor, Adam Powley. Did I say Gary Stevens already? But hopefully these are of interest to you and give you a bit of an insight into how I thought, how I think. And hopefully you've been entertained. So speak to you in a week or so, maybe two, and with some more questions. So thank you, Tom, for your input today. Like the shirt very much. And certainly the cockerel on the badge there.
And, it's a classic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Steve, I wonder if we should mention our new signing as well. We've signed Ivan Perisic since we last...
Yeah, Perisic. Well, I've liked Perisic for about the last 7 or 8 years. And I realise he's of an age to warrant an opinion. And I've been very, very... He seems to me like an ideal Conte player. There's a consistency. There's a mentality in there. I think he can play some varying positions. I'm not sure actually what his best position is, but I'm sure Conte does. And I think it's like anything. It's like anything. Every signing you make can be criticised. I always... getting too much money, or he's too old, or he's too this, or he's too that. Even quick players, you know, I've seen described as too quick. They've got no brain. But I think it's a good signing. I'm encouraged by the fact that it's obviously a Conte signing. That's what I like the most about it. And
Happened early as well, didn't it?
Yeah, long may that continue. And as you said, Tom, early, we've not waited right to the end, where everyone else is getting involved. So, wonderful. Great, great signing for me.
Agreed.
Well done, Tom. And have a good weekend. What a weekend of celebration this is. Fantastic. I'm a Queen fan. And, you know, I'm not a music fan, so you know where that is. You know where that's going. So, yeah. Well done, Tom. Thanks for listening, viewers. Listeners, and speak to you soon. Up the Spurs, even our season.